This is The National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Ari Shapiro. It may be more than a year until we have a vaccine for COVID-19, and that means a return to normal life may also have to wait. Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates is now chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which is also an NPR funder. He has invested in coronavirus vaccine research, and Gates told me this in an interview earlier this week.
We're not sure yet which activities should be resumed, because until we get a vaccine that almost everybody's had, the risk of a rebound will be there. I do think manufacturing, construction, a lot of things will do, but large public gatherings may have to await until we have that vaccine.
Well, you've sent us a lot of questions about the timeline for getting a vaccine and about other treatments for this disease. NPR science correspondent Joe Palca is here with some answers. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Ari. How are you doing?
All right. Let's start with that timeline question. Kevin in Wisconsin left us this message.
We need a vaccine in 3 months, not 18. How do we make that happen?
Joe, it does seem remarkable that with virtually the global scientific community all single-mindedly focused on this one task we're talking about more than a year, is there any possibility that it happens more quickly than predicted?
Possibility, yes. It's really a remarkable situation. I mean, normally vaccines, yes, a year is an astonishingly fast time. So doing it in less than that would be remarkable. At the same time, yes, there are a lot of people working on this. The trouble is that there's certain things you can't hurry up. For example, let's say you want a vaccine that works for at least six weeks, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't wait 6 weeks in testing it, you're not going to know whether it lasts for 6 weeks or 6 months. So there's certain like practical reasons. Now, you don't have to go all the way out to 6 months. If you're seeing something that's robust and builds confidence, then maybe you can stop sooner. But there are just a certain number of steps. And the other important thing to keep in mind is this is something you're giving to people who are healthy. They don't have a disease yet. They're healthy people. And you don't want to give somebody something that's going to make them sick, because before they take the vaccine, there's a zero risk that they're going to get sick from the vaccine.
Right.
Once they take the vaccine, there's a finite risk. And you want to know what that is. And
yeah,
it's
and
hard.
We're talking about something that's going all over the world to millions of people. Yeah.
Billions, Ari, they're talking about. And if you even have a 0.01% of people, that's hundreds of thousands of bad outcomes if you don't get it right.
Oh, that's a valuable perspective. Let's take this question from Vicki Lawrence in Louisville, Colorado, who wants to know about what it'll take to get things back to normal.
I know that in general, we like to keep 90% of the population vaccinated to keep the herd immunity. Does that mean that we need to have that many people in the population get COVID or else have a vaccination before we can completely open our society back up? Thank you.
That's a great question from Vicki. When you look at the challenges we've had getting masks or tests to the entire population, you think about getting a vaccine to 90% of the population, and that seems really daunting.
Yeah, it is daunting. The only thing I can say that maybe makes it a little less daunting is that it's not certain that you need to get to 90%. That number is based on how infectious the disease is and how easy it is to transmit from one person to another. You may be able to get away with considerably less than that, 50%, 60%. Mm-hmm. It's too soon. People are still learning the behavior of this virus to know how to make these predictions about how large a population you'll need to get vaccinated. But yes, it's staggering. And you can't just say, oh, well, we're going to vaccinate people in the United States and that's all we need to worry about. Doesn't work that way anymore. As we saw, this virus doesn't really care where you come from. If you can get on an airplane, you can take it anywhere.
Yeah. We have another question about vaccine availability. This one's from Susan in Chicago.
Not if, but when a safe vaccine is available, who will be eligible to get it? Will everybody get it? Will only those at high risk get it? Or will anybody who wants it and can pay for it get it? Thank you.
You could imagine a system in which any of those things are possible, right? The people with money get it, or the people who are most vulnerable get it, or everyone. What's likely to happen?
Well, there's a bunch of scenarios. I have to say, as a citizen of the world, I'm guessing money will have an influence on who gets it. But at the same time, it depends a little on the size of the problem. If you think we're facing more more likely upheavals of society like we're suffering right now. The first people you want to get it are the healthcare workers who can protect us. And then you start looking through the essential members of society, the people who keep things going.
The grocery police, store workers.
Fire, ambulance. Exactly, as we've learned, the grocery store workers. But they're sometimes they're not public officials. They're as you say, grocery store workers, maybe delivery people. In order to keep the society moving, you have to think about how to do it. So there's that calculus. And as we were just talking about, there's the global calculus. We in the world have to figure out how to get this vaccine, if it comes, when it comes, let's be positive, to everybody. And that's something that really people are having to start to think about now, because it's just not the case that we can sit back and say, oh, great, we've got it, now what? I mean, think about it too, Ari. Let's say there's a vaccine that's in 6 months, yeah, we're ready to go. Well, somebody has to build the facility that's going to be able to make a billion doses of that vaccine.
Yeah.
Somebody's building that facility now. In fact, Bill Gates, who you talked to earlier in the week and quoted at the top of the hour, he's putting money into building manufacturing facilities to make vaccines that may never make it to market.
Wholly apart from the research into the vaccine, yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's one part of the equation. But the other part is, yeah, you got a great vaccine. Who's going to make it?
Yeah.
And so his foundation, as I'm told today, is putting money into or is planning to into building the infrastructure that's going to be necessary.
We have several questions about whether other vaccines might help increase resistance to COVID-19. This one comes from Sushma in Massachusetts.
Do people who have taken the flu shot have any advantage? Meaning, do they have a lesser chance of getting COVID-19? And if they do, is it less severe?
Similarly, Susan Newman in Arkansas asks, are people who've received the pneumonia vaccine doing better than those that didn't? We've just got about a minute left for your answer, Joe.
Okay, well, the first part, Sushma's question, if she takes the flu vaccine, it increases the likelihood that she won't get flu. Unfortunately, it doesn't do anything for the coronavirus. They're very different viruses. I mean, it's just it'll make you healthier, I suppose. You don't want to get flu and then COVID-19. So,
and
it doesn't
work
that way.
And the pneumonia vaccine?
And the pneumonia vaccine is also a problem. The pneumococcal vaccine works against a bacterial form of pneumonia, and the virus causes, guess this, viral form of pneumonia. Hmm. And so it's possible that afterwards it might be useful, but probably not before.
All right. Well, if you have a question for Joe Palca about developing a coronavirus vaccine, send it to us at npr.org/nationalconversation or share it on social media using the hashtag NPRConversation. We're going to take a short break. Stay with us.